first real conversation I ever had with my coworker and friend, Juliana, was about a dream she had had the night before. I can't honestly recall the details of the dream. All I know is that she was speaking about her dreams with a confidence and a clarity that I found spellbinding. It was clear that this was a realm that she spent a lot of time and energy being consciously aware of. She was invested in her dreams, and a big believer of the perceived messages they brought her. My atheistic, skeptical brain always wants to dismiss any self-proclaimed dreamweavers as nothing but a bunch of mystical horse pucky. But my anecdotal experience with dreams leaves me rapt with fascination when someone seems to have a deeper understanding of just what in the hell is going on with ourselves while we sleep. Because even the skeptics among you out there have to know what I'm talking about. You've had weird dreams. Whether it was an abstract dream that seemed weird initially but later revealed itself in your waking life and you realized you had somehow predicted a future event. Or maybe you shared dream space with a friend or a relative and they confirmed in the waking reality that it was indeed them. Or maybe you lived the length of a lifetime in a single night and woke up confused as to who or when you were. All of those things have happened to me. I once dated, married, and began raising a family of dogs with actress Bryce Dallas Howard. It was about a 6-year period in vivid detail, and it all occurred in my head in the course of an 8-hour REM cycle when I was about 15 years old. Imagine my surprise when I woke up to find that not only was I not married to the star of The Village in Jurassic World, but I'd never even met her, and I still lived with my parents, and I was a virgin. I don't claim to know with any degree of certainty just what is going on astrally while we sleep, but Juliana seems to feel reasonably confident that she's found language to at least talk about or explore the possibilities of what's going on. And I am all here for that kind of speculative pontification. So, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today my friend Juliana DeVar and I are taking a deep dive into the strange and ethereal world of dreams. But I've had several people say that they get nervous because and I get nervous every time. It's a weird thing. You listen to podcasts at home and you're like, I can do this because it's just talking. And I talk to people all the time and I'm just going to talk like I talk when no one's recording. But then the second that the record button's hit, you have all this thought of like, okay, well, this is it now. There's no going back. There's no second takes. And it has to be interesting and funny and insightful and hopefully correct. Like, hopefully, like, I sound intelligent and I also sound entertaining. And I said, you know, and it's like, so you're thinking all these thoughts while you're trying to just have a natural conversation. And it's tough, you know, like, it's really hard to just kind of relax and trust that it's going to be okay, you know?
Are we going already? Have you tricked me?
Are
we just going into natural flow?
Who knows? We'll just talk.
Yeah,
it's happening.
It's happening. I knew
this.
This
is it.
I was looking at you. I was like, look it. He's already on.
He's
already on. I can see it. Even the look in your eyes. I was just like, damn it.
Exactly. Trying to be natural, but I can't help it. I go into, now I'm in show mode. You see the shift in
Absolutely. I felt that shift.
You recognized it and you leaned forward too. Yeah. You were like, oh, we're going.
My eyes got big.
I'm ready.
Here we go.
See, and you look cool holding your... Only your pop screen. So some people don't do it, but like, you've got it. It looks like you're holding a lollipop.
Yeah, I'm engaged.
What do you think of the fort? I mean, you said it doesn't...
I need everyone to know that this isn't quite the blanket fort that you imagined. It's more like, I mean, there's a giant mattress here. I thought the blanket fort was, I thought that I was going to be actually inside, like maybe like a little tent.
You thought it was,
I expected I was going to be on my belly, actually, to be completely honest.
You like, thought we were going to lie crawl, down.
And crawling in.
Use a flashlight to light
yeah,
the space.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I thought there might be like some little friends inside the blanket fort. Yeah.
Well, let people believe that if they want.
Okay, I'm sorry to ruin this. Let your imagination
run wild with what you think the possibilities of the fort can be.
Yeah, and what type of blanket, you'll never know unless you come on.
Exactly. What? How many blankets?
How many blankets?
How how small is the area that we're in? How
exactly
the specific nature of this fort?
Yeah.
Every blanket fort's different, and I would say this qualifies like.
Oh, it's definitely a fort. It's definitely a fort. I think it could use more blankets.
I think so, too. I think I could use more blankets to deaden the sound,
Yeah, too. But I'm pretty impressed with the blankets that you do have. I was like, oh, yeah.
It's like a nice, like, deadening. It's a thick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I could use this one, too, but I'm sitting on it.
But that's exactly necessary for sitting, right? The blanket doesn't have to just be on top. No.
Yeah. The blankets are however you want to use them in one's fort.
Yeah, yeah. There we go.
We got a lot to cover here, so I want to just, like, jump right into this because there's so much stuff that I want to talk to you about with this topic. I want to start off a little bit because you and I are coworkers who, in passing in our free time at work, which is usually just at the end of the shift, will, like, jump onto a topic, whatever the topic is, and get really into it. But also at the same time, I'm like, I don't know much about this person as far as your background and like where you're from. So if you could start me off with kind of like a little bit about your background and how you came to be so interested in this topic and dreams and like dream psychology. And,
Okay. So definitely. And hello everyone. I'm Juliana, by the way. Nice to talk with you all. Yeah. So as a kid, I basically struggled with a lot of nightmares to the point where I was having an existential crisis by the time that I was like in fourth grade every single night, just so fearful of what was happening on the other end, where I would, what would happen when you die. And it came to this point where I just had to like shape up for myself because I was in a room by myself and started becoming a lucid dreamer naturally. Well, ever since then, I've had strong and powerful dreams. I come from a family of female dreamers that are pretty, I feel like I'm stuttering right here. Can we?
I don't think so. No.
Ooh, I'm getting so nervous, guys. Literally like starting to sweat.
I haven't heard a single stutter.
And I'm even rehearsed my story. I was like, he's going to ask me about my story. This is what I'm going to do. And here I am. I'm so afraid to be here. And I'm telling you, I talk all the time. Like, I don't ever shut up. And the second that there's a mic in front of me, I'm so nervous for this.
You weren't stuttering, though. You were doing a really wonderful job.
Okay.
I think, I got to say, I think it's fascinating that you came by lucid dreaming naturally, you said.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, like, do you have any tips on how to lucid dream or how people can get more comfortable with that? But the fact that you came by it naturally.
No, as a kid, definitely. By the time I was, like, 10 or 11, I became a natural lucid dreamer. And that
What is lucid dreaming?
Well, lucid dreaming is being consciously awake in your dreams. So,
kind of having a sense of control.
Yeah. I wouldn't really say control, in a sense, but more of being conscious and aware that you are dreaming. So there's various degrees that you can engage the dream from that point. But lucid dreaming in its essence, like boiled down, is having that awareness that you are in a dream. But back to my story.
I feel like a lot of people know that, but just in case, it's like a term they haven't heard, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people have. Back to your story.
Back to my story. Okay, so basically, I've always been a pretty profound dreamer. My grandmother actually would do dream interpretations for our family, and that's been something that's really prevalent with my life.
So this is a family.
Oh, yeah, totally a family practice. Thing, although we never really knew like the innate power that we had, but absolutely my family comes from powerful female dreamers. And so I've always been known as a dreamer because I'd wake up every single morning like, this is a dream that I had, wanting to share it with people. But basically a few years ago, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, my life had completely changed. I was in a super toxic relationship, which I will call myself out, guys. I was pretty toxic. And I was living in the Hamptons for a summer work job. And at that time, I was so drained because work was awful and I was going out into like the city all the time and I just lost my dreams. So I went through a period of having 6 months of no dreams, and that was a huge wake-up call for me because as somebody who's so attached to their dreams and as somebody who kind of like dances in that fantasy and loves to live in her own head and her own creation, being detached from your dreams is probably the worst thing that I could possibly be robbed of.
Do you think that you were not having dreams or you were not remembering dreams?
Not remembering dreams. Okay. Absolutely. So just to clarify, we are dreaming every single night whether or not we remember it.
Right.
But it got to the point that my energy was being used up during the day so that when it came to the night time, I needed to sleep. My body needed fundamental rest and healing that I wasn't remembering my dreams.
Yeah.
So by the time that I got back from this sick, like, four-month work stint, got home, broke up with a boyfriend, and as soon as I broke up with the boyfriend, my dreams came back online. Like, immediately, that was a huge energy drainage that was happening. And from that place, my dreams had shifted from being, like, normal, vivid dreams to now incredibly prophetic dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I basically had a dream that my my cousin... I was pregnant in my dream, and in this dream I told her I could not have the baby, that she needed to take the baby for me. So in dream fashion, she took the baby, grew a belly, I saw the baby, everyone was so happy that she was pregnant.
She took the baby
into her dream.
Love it.
Yeah. And everyone just loved it. I was like, thank you. She's like, don't worry, I'll raise this baby as my own. 2 months later, find out she's pregnant, and I start crying. I tell her, you're having a girl. Remember that dream I told you. So all these fascinating dreams started to unfold. And from that place, I was back in my dreams. I was so excited. And then I started realizing that as I got back to lucid dreaming, that as I made these conscious choices within my dreams, so like, I like to mention that I used to have a lot of anger issues and a lot of anger that would come about. And I was having these anger dreams that were just incredibly frustrating because if you're experiencing anger in your waking reality and then anger in your dreams, it's like, I can't escape this.
Oh, that's the worst.
So I finally decided
I've been having those recently.
Yeah, right? So it's something that needs to be looked at.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally just started changing my dreams and I would wake up in my dreams and be like, I'm not responding to this anger in this dream. And so with that practice of like, okay, this dream is showing me this. And if I make this choice in this dream, I'm now changing the way that I respond to it. So this beautiful unfolding started happening where I took myself on this incredible healing journey where within a year and a half, my entire reality shifted while still living at my parents' house, still working the same job, but I was completely different person because of the way I engaged with the world. And basically to tell you guys what this is doing is as you choose, as you make conscious choice in your dreams, you're basically working with your subconscious to then create and strengthen new neural pathways of behavior. So I came into this all just by happenstance, and I was so juiced on it. It felt like the grayness of life had just been lifted. And that's where I'm at now, like super excited, super passionate about dreaming and wanting to share that with everyone because every single person dreams every single night and we're given this choice for creation. And what are you going to do to basically bring your life into being?
I find that so fascinating because I like that it starts in the family,
mm-hmm.
that it goes back to your grandmother did dream interpretations and stuff like that. I think I didn't know that history of it, and it's nice to see how you came by it. But also, like you said, everyone dreams. This is why I find this topic so fascinating, because I think it's really easy for us, I think a lot of people kind of dismiss dreams as inconsequential and as just kind of like, it's just the meanderings of our one organ that doesn't really shut down. Everything else kind of goes into a state of paralysis and the brain can't, otherwise we die. And the way it keeps itself busy while we're asleep is it just sort of like poofs out silly stories that like sometimes are weird and sometimes are scary. And I think it's really easy to dismiss them as, inconsequential and not important, but, so many, myself included, so many people have experiences in the dreamscape and in the dream world where, like you expressed with predicting your cousin's pregnancy, that leave us to go like, what the hell is going on in there? Because whether or not it's a coincidence, and I think it could be argued it's a coincidence, you know, you had a dream that you had a baby in your tummy and your cousin put it in hers, and then 2 months later she got pregnant. Wow, that's amazing, but also, you know, crazier things have happened. You know, people have looked at a photograph from, you know, they looked at a friend's photograph from a vacation and gone, I'm in the background of your photograph. I was on vacation with my family at that, you know, like coincidences are wild and it's crazy and people could boil it down to that. But I think that there's enough people who have done this work historically through the species. And I don't think that it's all just woo, that it's all just magic. And I think that there's something about, and I know that I think you agree with this, that there's something about the extra dimensionality of human beings we have access to. So I guess that would be my first question is, what do you think of the dream space as being extra dimensional? And do you think it's a space that solely exists in our brains, or is it a separate inhabitable plane of reality, basically?
Yeah, so no, I definitely think that the dream world and the dream reality and is 100% a field of reality in its own, but it's not separate from anything. So it's so highly interwoven into everything that we experience, that we do. So even if, say, we're awake right now, we're talking, right? Mm-hmm. We're still interacting in a dimensional reality that can then play into our dreams. Because basically, the dreams that we're getting are just these set of symbols, the storyline that comes from us trying to interpret what kind of multidimensional experience we just had. Mm-hmm. And within this field of reality, all living beings, all plants, animals, people, both on planet Earth and throughout the entire universe have access to that. So we're all actually in this field of reality, creating and dreaming ourselves into being. And that's where we get all those coincidences that are happening.
Yeah. Okay. So we are, I think that's interesting that you're saying it's not separate.
No, it's not separate.
Because I have a hard time when I describe it as like, if the dreamscape's a real place that I can go and I can actually inhabit this place, it feels weird to call it like a physical plane of reality because it feels metaphysical or extra physical or I don't know, outside of my physical experience. But at the same time, this is the thing that's always tripped me out about dreams. The dream can feel so much like reality in the dream.
Yes.
And then almost that I don't remember my waking life. You and I are awake right now talking. And in the dream space, I don't really remember my waking life. All I know is the dream world. Just like when I wake up, I have a hard time remembering the dream space. And that leaves me to go, which one's the real world? And you're saying that...
Well, that's the forever question, right? Which one is the real world? This is just the longer dream. This waking dream is the longer dream that we keep re-entering.
It's so trippy. I think Christopher Nolan hits some things really nicely in that movie in Inception.
Oh, yeah, in Inception.
Where it's like when there's the scene where like he's talking to Cillian Murphy in a diner and it's like raining on the windows of like the hotel lobby and they're talking and he points it out. He's like, have you noticed that the weather's changing inside right now? And he's like... He's like trying to tell him, he's like, we're in a dream right now. And the guy's like, no, we're not. And he's like, no, pay attention. And he's like, the weather's changing inside of that hotel lobby. And he's like, you wouldn't notice these things unless I pointed them out to you. And that's the thing that makes me go, okay, that's how I know when I'm dreaming. Cause I have had lucid dream experiences where I'm driving in a car and the car's not responding to my, it's not responding to my steering. Mm-hmm. And rather than freaking out, I do have a moment of fear, but then I think, oh, no, I've been here before. I know what's going on. I'm dreaming. Yeah. And I'll climb into the back seat and I'll kind of just let the car go. And once I do that, the dream sort of stops and I go to another place. It's like, oh, okay, you're on to us. Like, So there are things that I can recall from dreams where I'm like, that is clearly divorced from my waking life. Mm-hmm. My waking life obeys laws of physics and rules of physical reality, the dreamscape. I've flown in dreams. Mm. I've leapt really high, been able to jump over mountains and things like that. So if it's not, if it's the same thing, I wonder what that space is and if you have any theories.
Yeah. Okay. So this is something that we're never really going to get any answers to.
Sure.
Really.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously.
Absolutely. But I also think that to steer a little bit, I also know that when I experience, there's different tones and layers and levels of dreaming. So you're not just going to like one physical place as you see, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you're visiting with other beings, or sometimes other beings are coming into your place, or sometimes you're visiting a physical location. So there's also the astral realms that you might be thinking of. So if you feel like, oh, suddenly I was in Montana this weekend, you might be visiting that on an astral realm, which feels more physical. So what I mean by that it's all the same thing, it's this greater understanding of it rather than like this one fixed point of this is this one dimension, but everything is incredibly interwoven.
It has to be, right?
Yeah. But you're going to be experiencing different various realities within that. So each, yeah.
That's the description that makes me go, okay, it's not woo, it's not magic, yeah. It's all part of the same physical universe that we... I just like the theory of, I think it was...
Maybe it's our levels of perception that are changing that then make it seem like we're entering into different places, right? So if I'm here in waking reality, my perception can only show me so much. So as I'm sitting here with you, right, I have my brain that's involved in saying that this is what physical reality should be like.
Yes.
But then when we go into dreamscape, our perceptions of things are changing. So then those realities are shifting within
as
well.
I talked about this in the drug episode with Sean. We talk about the filter of the mind being opened by psychotropic drugs, where it's like, I can only handle so much detail of reality at a time in my waking brain. I can only take in so much detail. So I take something like LSD and it opens up the filter a little bit more, and suddenly I'm seeing, you know, mitochondria move on a person's face. Yeah. And it's like detail that I never needed to know was there, but I'm seeing it now. And maybe it's kind of like that, where like the perception of it is changing in that space. And yeah, if it's astral, I can visit. I like the idea of I can visit physical spaces or I can enter other spaces that are less familiar to my waking life, but it's all interwoven into the same chessboard, if you will. I think Neil deGrasse Tyson has this this analogy about chessboards, where he's like, we think that our understanding of physics and astrophysics is, you know, like the chess pieces can move forward and diagonal and side to side. And he goes, but we only understand this much of the board.
Oh, and the top part.
Yeah. And we don't know what's above it and what's below it and what's, you know, through an invisible, through a black hole. We have to understand that our understanding of our physical universe is limited. And we all know that dreams are real.
Yeah.
Like, we know they exist. And you can't just disacknowledge that and just go like, ah, you're talking a bunch of nonsense when you're talking about astral planes and astral projection. It's like, we know you've been there.
Yeah. And there's been science, like tons of science
on
this.
And as much as we study, we still can't seem to get a grasp on it. But it's like, it is there. We go there. And people have crazy experiences in there. So why not just kind of accept it as a part of the fabric of... The conscious
Absolutely.
Experience.
Yeah, it's just one side of the coin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about past lives a little bit. You've talked about past lives interacting with our dream space. And this is another thing where people go, past lives, a bunch of bullshit. It's like, but this can be scientifically quantified, I think, in the evolutionary disposition of genes to survive and passing on genes.
Yeah.
That it's not necessarily like, me past life, but like my genes and the things that, like, the people that I, the atoms that make me up, and the code that was passed on to create me, where it came from, and carrying traumas from past circumstance, you know.
Okay, so you talking about basically bloodlines?
Yeah, bloodlines
or past lives, because...
Are you saying they're two different things?
Well, I mean, they can be interwoven, right? So you can have a past life within your own bloodline, definitely, but I'm wondering if your question is more going for, like, things that are passed on by family, or...
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to understand the concept of past lives in a... pseudoscientifically viable way.
I feel like everything I do is pretty like pseudo.
It's all very, it's all very, pontific. It's all very ethereal and like best guess, but I like it because it's just putting language to these mysterious unknowable things and putting vocabulary to it. So, that's what I'm trying to do is understand past lives.
So the way that I see past lives, I guess, so I don't see that we're necessarily limited to just lives in the past. That would be kind of like a linear way of thinking. So past lives can also be like future lives. So if you kind of think of it exponentially moving in all different ways, just how we describe like the chess
outside
piece.
Outside of the bonds of time.
That's exactly how lives can be. And not all our lives are limited to here earth lives. Mm-hmm. But once again, how we talked about like the psychotropic drugs, you can only handle so much of that understanding of your life. That's basically all your past lives aren't going to come through unless they're beneficial to you. So you really have access to the lives that are really heavily influencing this one. So for me, stuff like experiencing the anger, I know that that's, especially as a kid, I had really strong Like, I would have temper tantrums up the wazoo, basically. And I started to come to know, like, that is definitely some past life trauma that I'm carrying through. So a lot of anger that's coming through. So in the Dreamtime experience, you can have access to this because it'll be helpful and beneficial to heal. So in past lives, what I'd say is that when you dream, I guess I don't have a full knowing that absolutely that was a past life experience. But if you're in a dream, you can start to see, like, okay, I'm in a different time, I'm in a different dress, even the way that I look, even the way that I feel, everything doesn't seem to be of this. I'm probably experiencing a past life. What is this showing me? And that's a pretty cool way, because then you're being given that lifetime to present something to help you in this current lifetime. So every single past life, future life, even life of a different being, we're not limited to just human beings. Although not everyone experiences that.
You just blew my goddamn mind. Yeah. We're not limited to human beings.
We're not limited to human beings.
Are you talking about...
Yes.
Tigers and lions and dolphins and octopuses, or are you talking about...
Are you
talking about extra-dimensional beings?
I'm talking about extra-dimensional beings, but as well, like, our consciousness has evolved. Like, as consciousness, we have experienced everything, the totality of everything. So we have had lives where, yes, we have been tigers and elephants and all those. But saying is that... is that if you're open and receptive in your Dreamtime experience, you will be more likely to experience those extra dimensional beings, right? So I've been finding myself that I have a fascination, guys. I am obsessed with aliens. And lately, I've been going on a journey where in my Dreamtime experience, I've been giving a little bit of nugget, a little another nugget, a little another nugget. And recently, I had a totally cool dream where I saw basically black jaguar-like humanoid beings that came to me in my dream, which was a huge thing, a huge shift. But we're not really shown that unless we have a soul connection to that, right? Because if we think about everything, we are intricately connected to everything. But we're being given the experiences that are a part of us, because mm-hmm. that's what's helping us coming back to this now point. So in past life experiences...
I got to say really quick, I think that, again... a skeptic's brain, and I have a skeptic's brain. I have a brain that was created by, you know, years of atheism
Years atheist, yeah, came out of it because of a dream.
Yeah. My skeptic brain goes like, yeah, jaguar people, like, you created that, you know, jaguars, your brain is creating an amalgamation of an understanding of something. But again, it's like, why not? This did happen. I did see this thing. Yeah. Yes. In a dream. But since we all agree that, like, there are things going on in there that we don't understand, why not take it? And, like you're saying, by investing in that and by going, I'm not going to try to say where they came from or who they were specifically, but I'm going to give it weight and credence and not just dismiss it out mm-hmm. of hand and kind of try to investigate what that might have been for. Why not?
Yeah, and what's that showing you about you, a greater understanding of you? And what I've been finding mostly that is that all these dreams that I have, even if they're scary or even if they're hard, nightmarish, anything, it's just helping me to step back into relationship with myself. Mm. So if we look at dreams from that place, like, yeah, this may be a difficult dream, or this may be a really weird dream, or this may, whatever you're going to call the dream, it's all about showing you something about yourself to make your life easier. So it's like, okay, if I can move through that emotion or that feeling or that fear, or I can start learning that, hey, these extra dimensional beings and that these aliens are coming to me, maybe they have something to teach me. What is my dream teaching me? And what can I learn from it?
Have you read about, or maybe you've had experiences or listened to people talk about DMT experiences and like the visitation from like light beings and being taken into like the kind of the ground plan for the universe, area.
Yeah,
like,
totally. So I have not tried DMT, but ayahuasca, which does have a DMT. So I haven't had that full like 10-minute experience, but more the elongated, prolonged experience with ayahuasca. And that's actually where, after I had done like that whole year and a half journey of my own self-healing, I had an ayahuasca experience where I met with a council of women who basically told me, you are here to usher in the divine feminine through the Dreamtime experience, and that I'm the ground crew to help get people just talking about dreams, which was like a pretty whopping cool revelation to have. But the reality of it is also kind of scary. Just like, okay, like, I love talking about dreams, but sometimes you just want to like shove it down people's throats. Like, tell me what's happening. So I've absolutely had that experience of, yes, having meeting with people and knowing that like it's time to wake up.
Yeah. Again, what's so fascinating to me about those experiences that people relay is A, how similar they all are, mm-hmm. and how, so it's very much like dreams, where you can talk about dreams with people, and everyone's like, if you talk about the weirder things in dreams, and I'm going to get into some of these things, I'm going to get into deja vus and shared dream space, like seeing people in your dream, and then like, you know, and these things. And they're so universal, and people will express saying, yes, that's happened to me too. And that's what's so interesting about the DMT experience to me is people describing very, very similar places that they're going to and visitations from these beings. And maybe this is all stuff that just exists in our heads that we all have access to given this chemical. But how the fact that, like, we found ayahuasca by, like, combining a plant with, like, toad venom or something. And it's like...
two plants, and actually the plants told the people.
And there was the plants, and then there's another one that, like, the toad venom. But it's like, mm-hmm. how in the world? Yeah. That, like, so it's so bizarre that that even came to be. But there was a guy that I was watching that was talking about this, and he was describing his experiences with DMT, and he recorded himself while he was on it and stuff. And then he was describing what the recordings of him talking about, what he's seeing. And he said that these beings told him that the purpose of life is for, and I loved this. He said for consciousness to be aware of itself. Yeah. And that seems so self-evident that it's like, I'm aware of myself. I'm aware of myself. But everything you were just saying about, all of these visitations being for you specifically, mm-hmm. to become more self-actualized and mm-hmm. more self-realized. And it's not that you're particularly special in the scope of the universe. It's that everyone is particularly special. And this is sort of tied into my new conception of God, which is like, it is something inside of every single living being.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not this external space wizard that grants wishes when you when you ask really nicely. It's an internal force that exists mm-hmm. inside of each person. And again, I cannot prove any of this. And it's not about proof. It's about trying to come up with vocabulary to describe this experience. And what does it mean for consciousness to become aware of itself? It's not just, I'm aware, I have skin, I have fingers, here I am, I'm sitting here. It's, who are you, though, cosmically, and what makes you up? What is in your bloodline? What is in your DNA? And this is all stuff that, like you've said, we're never going to have concrete definitions of, but it's nice to try to formulate a relationship with, because it can be incredibly healing and incredibly strengthening, and can lead to growth, and can lead to confrontations with trauma and things like that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So what in your mind would be the difference between, I guess, past life and bloodline? Is there...
Okay, what I'm hearing here is like bloodline. So basically...
we went into past lives, I think.
Yeah. So what I would say with bloodline things is like the family that you came from, right? So you have long lineages that come before you, mm-hmm. from your mother, from your father's side, all of this that goes, dates back as far as you can go. So for me, what I experienced...
Every person
does. Every person, right?
You can't not. If you're alive today, it goes all the way back.
Exactly. And so through that, we actually pass down, I don't want to say like necessarily just genetics, but energetically, we are passing down the things that we have experienced into our children. So things like when women have babies, it's so important that time when you're actually pregnant to then create a field of harmony as best as you can, of course, because all of that information is being put into the child. So with bloodline stuff, I found that I've actually dreamt with my ancestors because you have that connection. So if you're reaching out and you're trying to get connected with, say, some type of spiritual-based practice, the best place to start would be within your own bloodline. So my family happens to be from Mexico. And it's really cool because Mexico, the name of Mexico comes from, I believe, the Mexica language, mm-hmm. Mexica people, and it means navel of the moon, and they're considered the dreamers.
That's cool.
So navel of the moon connected to dreams, and the Mexico people are the dreaming people. So in that way, I have a strong connection with dreaming that comes in from my bloodline, right? Mm-hmm. But then also accessing those practices within my own bloodline for dreaming will help me activate more of myself instead of being like, oh, well, those dreaming practices over there. Like, you can always integrate other things, but if you start to come from your bloodline, you have the strength of all the people who came before you who have been practicing those ways.
This could be helpful. I had a conversation with my friend about anger on one mm-hmm. of the episodes, and one of the things that I express frustration about is that, like, when I try to track the origins of my anger, mm-hmm. it feels like something that's always been with me. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, I don't know where it began. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times people will go like, well, something happened to you in your childhood. But I'm like, no, I remember being like a toddler and yeah. being mad that people, that my mom's attention was being taken away from me by other yeah. people. And that, it just goes to, you see babies get mad. Yeah. Babies like ah, like, yeah. like I can't communicate the way I want to communicate. And it feels, so I'm like, how do I conquer something that feels so intrinsic to my being? And A, I think it's ever about conquering or overcoming. Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah. But I also think this could be helpful to put language yeah. and just give a conception of an idea of like, that this is energetically part uh-huh. of your lineage and part of your heritage. And it's not a failing on your part, and it's not yes. something to necessarily be ashamed of or mm-hmm. to be trying to overcome.
Yeah.
But then just understanding that this is something that was in you before you came out of the womb.
Yeah. But also, I think that you're given these things. First of all, anger is an emotion, so anger can move through us. It's what you do with anger, right? So it's how you interact with anger and everything that comes about it.
Love
so,
that.
Yeah. So for me, I'm still working on how to express anger in a healthy way. Because once I brought the awareness to it, for me, I've been suppressing it since. Like, I never suppressed my anger growing up, mm-hmm. but now I'm finding myself suppressing. But what I've been realizing is that these states that seem to overcome us, we're actually being given the tools and the opportunity. Well, if we search for the tools, we are basically the transmuters of this, right? So whatever comes down our family line, it's not to say, oh, it just came in my family line. It's like, no, I am here on earth today to transmute this trauma, this anger, this living being that's inside of me that seems to consume me and bring it back into harmony within myself for future generations, for my bloodline. So you're moving both forward and backwards in time and for humanity as a whole. And this is something that I've experienced with my own depression and struggling with depression, having these moments of realizing, oh my God, the depression is not mine, but a state that moves through me because I have the power to move it. And when you're in it, guys, it's fucking hard. You know it. I don't know if I'm allowed to cuss. Excuse me.
No, but, we cuss on the show.
Yeah, but it's fucking hard when you're in the middle of that. But when you're able to take a step back and bring that awareness, it's just like, oh, no, this is something moving through me that can come through me because I have that strength and power to bring it to love and to understand its own process.
God, I love that so much. That is so wonderful. I just was getting chills as you were saying that. I was like, that, because it also does such wonderful things for my skeptic brain. It, a lot of times when I hear stuff like this, it feels very grandiose and very like self-aggrandizing. Like,
yeah.
I am the one to fix the problems of the bloodline. But it's like, it's not that. It's just about you are in the place that you're in the line, and you are working with everyone yes. else in the bloodline, future and past, and the rest of the species
yeah.
to correct it, to do your part
yes,
now.
Yes, to do your part now.
Right
exactly.
now. And it's not about you being like special or messianic or anything like that. It's about like your mm-hmm. role in the wider fabric of things and how you fit into it. And that goes back to my new conception of God, which is it's in you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it's not that, and it's not specifically in you and no one else. It's, you have your own, I love that the AA conception of God, it's yours. God as you understand it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that just really works for my skeptic brain that it, you know, I can get rid of all the voices saying like, you're being self-aggrandizing, you're being delusions of grandeur, you're being, you know, that really is lovely, lovely, lovely stuff. I want to talk about two things
yeah.
that are just kind of on the trippier end for me and
sure.
stuff that I'm like, the
yeah,
fuck?
Bring it on.
The first one is shared dream space.
Oh, God. This is the most exciting
yeah,
stuff.
And the second one
is on that.
Deja vu.
Yeah.
And so I'll start with the first one. I've talked to other people who have had similar experiences. I'll tell mine. I had a dream once where I was in a bar in like Tokyo and the movie Pacific Rim was happening outside. The real life. Like
real life, yeah.
Like
okay.
robots
okay.
were fighting.
Yeah.
And it was like,
was this before, like, you, or you saw the movie?
I saw the movie okay. and like, yeah. and there were giant monsters and robots were fighting them and I was witnessing it. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is awesome. My brother shows up in the bar and he comes up to me and he's like, dude, can you believe this? This is crazy. And I'm like, yeah, man, this is insane. It's one of the most vivid dreams I've ever had. And I remember him, we were talking, and he was like, I don't know, you feel different right now. I was like, why? He's like, it feels like it's really you. And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, it doesn't feel like you're part
wow.
of my dream. It feels like it's really you. I was like, no, this is me. You're in my dream. And he goes, no, you're in my dream. And I was like,
wow,
and I was like, no, man, you're in my dream. And so he goes, I'll tell you what, call me tomorrow morning and ask me if I was here, and I'll do the same. And I was like, all right, dude, this is crazy. And I remember both of us kind of tripping out in the dream, being like, because I was like, do you promise it's you? And he was like, I swear to God, it's me.
That's,
and I was
so
like,
dope.
This is so crazy. Yeah. So I call him the next day and I go, hey, and he still, when I tell him this story, he's like, I don't remember that. Because I call him the next day and I go, hey, do you remember your dream last night? And he goes, no, I don't. And I go, ah, man, you know, I was like really hoping that he would be like, yeah, I remember, you know, but so I'm like, ah, bummer. And I go, do you remember anything about your dream last night? And he's like, I don't know. Why are you asking me? And I'm like, I just tell me, do you know anything about your dream? And he's like, I don't know. All I know is I fell asleep. I was watching the movie Pacific Rim and I fell asleep.
Oh my gosh.
And he's like, I think I dreamt about that. And I'm like, dude, I was like, dude, you were there. And I've to this day, like, I've told him about this story and he's like, yeah, I don't know, man. He's like, couldn't I have just been watching that movie and you had, and I'm like, dude, I don't know. All I know is that we were certain that it felt like it was you.
I absolutely love that. Yeah.
It felt like it was you. And the fact that you were watching the movie and that, like, you know, and it's not weird that he didn't fully remember. Like,
that's, of course,
that's normal. But so we'll start there. Shared dream space.
Oh my God. So I'm the type of person where, like, I will never stop getting excited about dreams. When people start to tell me about these shared dreams, oh God, so exciting. But yeah, so absolutely, at least what I believe here is that when we are in the dream space, we are meeting with all different types of beings. So people in our lives, we are having these similar experiences, just like how you and I are here right now physically talking. This is just our physical bodies talking. But on a mental scape, our mental bodies are emotionally engaging with each other. So it kind of has an idea of what's happening. Our emotional bodies are also engaging with each other. Our spirit bodies are engaging with each other. So there's multiple dimensions of reality that are currently engaging, but you and I are really only aware in this moment of this physical and probably the mental as we're talking, right? So having that shared dream experience is those bodies going forth and communicating with other people. So what I'm kind of seeing is, like, maybe you had an astral dream where you were experiencing watching that movie. And it's not to say that there's any, like, one specific way that an astral dream is always going to be. So you can also be experienced kind of astral dreams, kind of this blend and this mix of things. So shared dream experiences are really amazing because we are in the process of co-creation with everyone. So in this shared dream experience, we can actually work things out with people. So say you are, like, fighting with a loved one. Oftentimes people have dreams where they're suddenly fighting with that person and they come to conclusions and start to find some healing with that. Or these shared dream experiences, I think, that also connect people. So I had a fun dream where someone that I knew in elementary school, he came up to me, basically in this dream, he comes up to me in a party and he kisses me on the lips. And I was kind of, like, shocked. And I was like, okay, whatever. And I like to make sure to write down every single person who's ever in my dream because I want to be able to also hold it up against waking reality to see what comes true or what anyone else experiences. So I write this all down. 2 days later, he messages me, hey, you're in my dream. And I was like, oh, that's funny. What was the dream about? And he's like, oh, I don't remember. And he asked me, what did you remember? And I was like, oh, yeah, you totally kissed me because I have no problem sharing, like, what came in out of the dreams. And he's like, oh, my God. He's like, in my dream, I walked up to you and I kissed you as well. And I was like, great. That means you need to come to my next dream workshop. So I think that we're, like, engaging with people, right? We're reconnecting with people. We're learning from people. So shared dream experiences, we can come into other people's dreams. And probably something that's a little bit scary for me is I had a dream created from me and I actually spoke to the creator of the dream, and that shattered everything because as somebody
basically there are certain
people, so there's like yogic paths where you can then be more in control of your dreams, where you can actually create dreamscapes. So there's shamans around the world
would
who
this be like
this
the
power.
Ellen Page in Inception where she's like the designer and she
yes,
like designs
exactly.
the
yeah.
And
exactly.
She's like
so
folding.
You can design dreams, right?
Yeah.
So there's higher levels of that, which is kind of crazy and creepy to think that some of your dreams are not just like purely, this is just my subconscious and this is just, no. Like, my brain broke when I spoke to the creator of a dream because, first of all, guys,
no.
nap dreams are crazy. crazy. And so I engaged with her and I was having this conversation and she was basically telling me, she's like, well, you opened yourself up. So basically she's like, right now you're buffering in other people's dreams because I have like, she was telling me that I have like a hole in my aura, not like one to be afraid of, but basically that I was open enough, which I am pretty open. I'm pretty like, I'm out there. So I'm open for lots of experiences. And she was saying I was able to come in. So I was talking to her about it and she was actually able to tell me about it, an experience that I had a couple weeks ago and how I could then close that for myself. So that broke my brain thinking that other people can create dreams for you. But in that same space, we can absolutely walk into each other's dreams, engage with people because we're having this shared experience.
I'm like imagining Tilda Swinton in Doctor Strange, like this like ancient one who's like astral projecting and like designing a dream for me. And then I meet them and they're like, you're not supposed to see me here. And I'm like, who are you? They're like, I'm the one who built this place. And I'm like,
it's totally crazy. And as you look around, you can even start to like feel a different energy. Like when you're in a dream that, like I said, different tones and different layers. So you can start to feel that, but shared dream experiences are super cool, especially when it's with people that you love. Right. And even in this way, when we like go into meditations with each other, I had a really cool experience where I was at a dream workshop and we were given a dream. This man's dream was basically meeting this angry witch woman inside of a church. And then we had three other dreamers who, through dream journeying to the sound of a drum, were supposed to go back in and all find information. So how it goes is we then share our experiences with the original dreamer sharing last to say what he said. So there's four of us that went back into this dream together and we all come out and we all shared the same experience. So even though we were awake going into this meditation, we also had that shared dream experience. So it just shows how incredibly connected we are. Like we...
Okay, this also sounds like the movie Inception.
Oh,
like
yeah.
These people
yeah.
like sitting down, going into the space together. First of all, I do think that this movie can get... sort of unfairly like made fun of, where people are like, it's so stupid. It's just like,
I love that movie when it came out. I don't even remember how old I was, but I was obsessed with it. Any movie about dreams, I had fun.
I think Chris Nolan is like one of the best in the game today. And I think that movie is so profound because it, on so many levels, it feels like a dream.
Yeah.
The movie feels like a dream because it feels, as it's moving along, like you're kind of you're following it with like a logic and you're like, yeah, this is mm-hmm. cool. They're going into the other layers and they're going to plant this idea in this guy's head. And by the time the movie's over, you kind of look back over the plot and you're like, what the hell just happened? Like, what the hell was all that? You know, and it's sort of like when you wake up from a dream and during the dream, it all makes sense.
It all makes sense, right?
And then after the dream, you're like, what the fuck was that? But if you think more about that movie later, you're like, what the movie's really about is the main character, Leonardo DiCaprio, dealing with the trauma of his wife's death. And so he's processing the trauma of his wife's death through this really elaborate, weird dreamscape mm-hmm. that he's sharing with his friends, and they're helping him through on this journey that's like really intense and like really bombastic. And there's all this like playing with time and like the time dilation of different dream levels and things like that. But it all boils down to he's trying to deal with the guilt of survivor's guilt and also just the trauma of his wife's death. And that's sort of what we're talking about here. Yeah. It's like, it can all get really crazy and really weird, but it boils down to really practical application.
Well, I actually want to talk about that now that we brought in the trauma of death. So today is actually the third anniversary of one of my closest friends, Kat, who passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And after her death, I was already on this journey and I had like my own version of it, but I had still come out of being like a pretty strong 9-year atheist. So when I opened myself up to all of this, besides dreams, like tapping more into the spiritual aspect of it, it was pretty scary. I had no words to define it. I had a huge like... hard time even saying the word God again. It took me years to get to that place.
Yeah,
but after her passing, it was 14 days after her death, and I got a text message from one of my friends saying, "Did you dream of Kat last night?" And her name was Kat.
Hmm.
And I said, "Yes, I did." And I shared my dream with her. And Kat, in her passing, reached out to four of her girlfriends and gave us all the same exact dream, slightly different. But in my dream, I hugged her, I held her, I told her that I missed her and I loved her. And she said, "I'm going to be okay, it's fine." In another girl's dream, she was on a boat with her. She's like, "Are you mad at me?" She's like, "No, I'm not mad at you." I hugged her, "I love you, it's okay, I'm fine." Another girl's, she appeared as a bird because she had all these bird tattoos. And then after appearing as a bird, she came into her physical form, hugged her, all these crazy things from the same exact night, this shared dream experience. So in that place of helping to process death when my friend Kat passed, no longer bound by her physical body, she was able to show me in through the Dreamtime experience that we don't really lose the loved ones. We just lose them in this physical. But she was able to show me through dreams where she was, what she was doing, and connecting with me, which was absolutely incredible because that also healed my skeptical mind, right?
And this is a beautiful story. And it is. My skeptical mind is blaring alarms of oh, you're talking about transcending physical forms after death. You're not talking about, nope, when you're dead, you're dead, you're in the ground. But I mean, how can, I listen to that story. It's a gorgeous story. And I feel like, isn't it, it's just as close-minded to not give that, to just toss that story out as nothing more than you just miss your friend and you and all your friends were thinking about her because it's like, but it happened, but yeah. I was there, yeah. And so were they. And yes, it was in the dream space, but the dream space is something we know so little about. Yeah. You can't just say it's just a thought cloud popped up by my brain, and that's all it was, and nothing more. You cannot definitively throw it out, and I don't think that means that you need to definitively jump to any other conclusion. But you also can't. I think you can't just toss out that experience. You know?
Yeah. I think one thing to get clear to everyone is that the dream reality is a reality of its own. Even if we can't fully understand it, it is a reality. And the experiences that we feel there are very real. You still feel emotions. You still have reactions, whether you wake up screaming or you wake up feeling good, right? It's creating chemicals now within your body
I've
that
woken
you're
up
responding
with,
to.
With pain from being hit. Or something, and waking up with pain.
Wow.
And so, it's like, the thing of anger dreams and stuff like that, where it's like, it's very not restful. I wake up and I'm
exactly.
upset.
Exactly, or you have a nightmare, and you can't, and
people know when you talk about that, it's like, everyone knows what it's like to wake up upset from a dream or crying from something that happened in a dream. So it's like that, you experience that. That's real. And whether it's kind of like psychosomatic symptoms, you know, people would like with anxiety, depression, people would go, oh, that's all in your head. And it's like, well, whether or not it is, I'm still experiencing.
Feeling. Exactly.
Getting to that place and just getting to a place of an acknowledgement that you did have this experience mm-hmm. that you shared with your friends, mm-hmm. whether or not it was literally the spirit of your friend coming or some, extra dimensional manifestation or some amalgam of what she now is in the scope of her bloodline, whatever it is, the best explanation is it was a visitation that we all shared in this space. And this is the literal explanation of it. What it really is, who the fuck knows? But for someone to just dismiss that as, nah, you're just, I'm like, you don't know, like how dismissive and how close-minded really, you know, from the other side, that's a really beautiful experience. I want to, if we can, pivot into, we talked about shared dream space. You talked about earlier about time going forward and backward and our, you know, the dream space maybe not being quite as limited in a linear sense as our waking life is. I know that I've had experiences where I have seen a thing and then 2 weeks later I have deja vu it's not deja vu of where have I seen this before. I know specifically where I've seen it before and it was in my dream and it was just like this. And I've talked to other people who have had that experience of, so I'm just, what the fuck is going on? I'm time traveling. It's not a maybe, this was it.
Okay, cool. So I absolutely love this because two things that I want to say. Dreams are the memories of the future. So space and time, we're going to say, throw that out there, right? It does not exist. And especially in the Dreamtime experience, I dream about the future quite often now that I'm paying attention to it. Because it's happening all the time, but if we're not aware of it, we really don't understand as much. But this cool thing happens that basically, I like to say high energy days that happen, or if you're in a space of more receptivity, you're creating this, at least, okay, so with mushrooms, right? So whenever I eat mushrooms, I will start dreaming with that mushrooms day about a month before I even plan the mushrooms trip or anything else, because that field of perception reality is crumbling and then I'm creating a high energy experience. And then suddenly I have all these memories basically that are serving as dreams from a month in the future. So this cool thing has been happening that when we experience deja vu is that dreams are kind of serving as a blueprint for creation. So if you start to think things like that before you have an action, you have a thought. So like reaching for this glass of water, right? I have to think that, oh, I'm thirsty. That thought is now motivating this, even if I'm not conscious of this. So dreams then are serving as this underlying blueprint, these currents of our life that are moving us into action.
What does it mean for free agency and manifest destiny and like choice? And I mean,
well, so that's where you get choices, right? So that's what I'm saying. Conscious creation in your dream time, you get to now choose. So if you're just being a victim to your subconscious patterns, then you're going to be seeing these dreams where that, say that anger dream keeps playing out. Then you're end up angry in real life. But if you're able to step inside and be like, I can make this choice. So you can make choices all the time. You just got to be changing those little patterns that are happening. So it is kind of scary because you think that everything's already planned. But the truth is, there's just a realm of probability and possibility. It's more likely that you're going to do this, but you still have the choice to respond in that. So when we experience deja vu, you're kind of seeing that blueprint that's going to come to be. And I really do believe that deja vu is also, you've experienced it in the dream. Whether or not you remember the dream, you're suddenly like, oh yeah, that's an alignment. So I start to think that like a deja vu experience is aligned with where you're, not necessarily where you're supposed to be, but you're in that place of you're in it, you're on it.
Mm-hmm.
You've marked the dot.
Boy, it's so weird. It really, when that's happened to me, it really throws for a loop my what I think I know.
Yeah.
About linear time and about the physical experience, because it really fucks with what I think I know about choice and stuff, because I'm like, how did I wind up here in the place that I saw? And I've thought of things like, is it just mathematical probability that my brain is capable of running through scenarios and kind of being a scenario simulator? And it runs through, well, if I do this and I go to this party, I might see this person and we might have this conversation, and it plays out, run simulation of 4276.
No, absolutely.
And that's the simulation that I see. And it winds up being remarkably similar to what happens in 2 weeks. And there it is. But it's so specific and it's so real, and it's so recognizable when I get there that it really it's just a thing that just makes me
crazy. I think that feels like
a better conception of what you're
And I've had deja vu experiences where suddenly I'm now experiencing two, like, as if boom, the deja vu experience feels like I experienced deja vu and like doubled down on the deja vu. And it's so crazy because it's just like, wait, I experienced two or three times the deja vu. And that really comes down, well, at least the way that I think about this, is that you're not just given the same dream, or you're not just given the dream one time, right? So this dream, you're constantly dreaming this dream into being. So having like a double down deja vu experience is like, I've dreamt about this more than one time. So this was something that was really guiding me toward this place, or really already coming into manifestation really strong.
A deja vu, according to the Wachowskis, is a glitch in the Matrix. You know, they say in the movie, a deja vu is a glitch in the Matrix. Do you think that a deja vu is us accidentally skipping through the temporal plane and like seeing through, like, that we're not supposed to see those things because we're not like we can only handle a certain level of reality, like we've been talking about? The filter needs to be closed for a reason, and we accidentally skip into our extra dimensional capability of moving through space and time.
I think that's accessible, and I think that at least where I would like to go with that is like accessing more of that, right? So bringing more of that in. I wouldn't say that when we experience deja vu, I mean, this is just personal, right? Everything is subjective, but for the way that I experience deja vu, I get excited. I'm just like, oh yeah, I dreamt that. I'm supposed to be here. I'm doing this. This is cool. At least if it's a good thing. So I don't see it as like a glitch in the Matrix.
Mine are usually so inconsequential. It's like, oh, I'm in the store, and then here comes that person.
Yeah.
And just like,
which is cool, because that's what I think, that like we're incredibly psychic. Like, so I get excited on these things knowing that like I dreamt that. Like my friends, I'll tell them anything can happen. I'm like, oh, I dreamt that. And they're like, oh, you, like, of course you dreamt that. Of course. But I'm still so excited. I'm like, oh, I dreamt this, and this is coming to being. Yeah. This is so cool.
It's wild.
What am I going to do now? And that's really giving us more power instead of feeling like, oh, I'm the victim and everything's playing out. It's just like, no. What do I get to do now that I know? Because I have that awareness that, ooh, I might respond this way. I don't necessarily want to react and respond. So now I'm coming back into that personal power.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that deja vu, I still don't fully know deja vu, to be completely honest. I feel like every time I experience it, I just feel like, all right, cool. Like, we're doing this.
Yeah. It's just one of those things it's a trip.
But I absolutely believe that it comes from a dream, or kind of maybe this. Maybe that like moment, like the little of awareness where what if a deja vu experience was another another dimensional version of you or a parallel you who was dreaming of that same experience.
Oh.
That would be crazy then, right? So then you're both having that moment of awareness of realizing at that same time.
We're inhabiting the same space. We're kind of bumping into each other on the chessboard that goes up and down and around.
Yeah.
And we're bumping into we're coming into alignment in that moment and we're and it's this weird like feeling of inertia.
That'd be cool, right?
And yeah, like this weird feeling of like dysphoria of like where
like maybe I didn't dream this, but that parallel version of me dreamt it and now I'm doing it.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's fun. I like coming up with theories. That's really fun. What do you know about sleep paralysis?
Okay, so sleep paralysis, I used to struggle a lot with sleep paralysis. So sleep paralysis to me is kind of an access point into the astral realm. So I think that people who experience sleep paralysis, I know that it can be incredibly frustrating and incredibly scary at times, and real panic does occur. But what I want to encourage people, and this is what I always share and tell people, is that this is a jumping off point for you to step into your astral body and to explore this. So sleep paralysis basically happens when your conscious mind becomes aware that you're sleeping and you're suddenly woken up into that dream of exactly where you're at. So you're fully in the astrals right there. But you get panicky because you realize that like your body isn't moving the right way. But if you can start stepping into the opportunity of that place, that's where I've actually really learned to have my astral traveling basically happen. And like kind of like imagine like moving your arm or moving these different things and not letting the fear overcome. And now here's the thing that I definitely do want to touch on is that if you have fear in sleep paralysis, like attracts like. So the fear that you have is then going to attract like those dark entities or darker beings that are then going to come and feel like they're sitting on you and get even scarier. So if you come into a place of sleep paralysis and you're able to stand and be like, okay, you know, I do feel fear, but it's okay. I'm going to breathe through this. And imagine like sending like love, a field of love just to yourself. Like, I love you. Cause like it, that's such a powerful thing that helps in dreams. Sending love is just easy. You can then move through it a lot easier, and not panicking will help you. If you want to get out of it, you can definitely get out of it. Or you can...
Yeah, because I only experienced it once, and I know people who deal with it. It's like a lifelong malady.
Yeah.
But the fear was so sudden and so intense. And so it felt... I mean, I had no warning.
Yeah.
And also, I thought I was awake. Because it is... It's sort of a melding of the waking world and the dream world.
Yes.
And in this way
that
where like,
right
like I opened my eyes and I was in bed and I couldn't move.
Yeah.
And I'd never experienced this before. And then someone got into bed next to me.
It's
and
creepy,
and
right?
I felt the bed depress down and I felt breathing on my neck.
Yeah.
And I couldn't turn my head to look at who it was. And I mean,
exactly,
and the fear was
real.
Overwhelming.
Yeah.
The fear was, I don't know if I've ever been so scared in my entire life.
Yeah.
And people who deal with this on a day, like who talk about the shadow demons in the corner or, you know, who see the demon cat that's on, that's pressing on their chest or, God, it's so hard to then in that moment go, I love this being and I love the, I mean, but.
No, totally. But that's where, that's basically where planting seeds comes into play. So I, at least for me, when I dream, a lot of this is planting seeds in waking reality. So it's basically what I'm imagining here is like you plant a seed in waking reality that then manifests in your dream, and then your dream plants a seed into your waking reality that manifests. So it's constantly the circle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're saying here, man, you know, I get really bad sleep paralysis. The next time I have sleep paralysis, I'm going to just not freak out, and I'm going to just come into this place where like, okay, I love you. It's okay. You're safe. Your subconscious mind may pick that up literally the next exact time where then you suddenly wake up with sleep paralysis and you go, oh yeah, remember I told myself this is what I was going to do. So you don't necessarily have to be conscious, but what you're doing is you're telling yourself, this is what the next step is going to be.
And that makes a lot of sense, weirdly. But I mean, I've had experiences like that with nightmares where like when you're dealing with stuff that's not, as concrete as like an intruder coming into your home, but it's like this entity that's like pressing down on you and that's bearing down on you. There is an enormous amount of power in just facing it calmly and just looking at it and kind of going like, okay, here we both are.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And the diffusal that happens is kind of amazing that you can experience in nightmares where you're running from something and you don't, when you just decide to stop running,
Yeah.
And you just sort of, and then the dreamscape changes the environment because you changes.
That's called dream alchemy. You have just changed the pattern of the dream.
Are you now a dream creator? Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you're always a dream creator, right?
So you're Ellen Page.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, you really are. And that's the beautiful thing is like you've stopped that energy from moving, right? You've changed that energy. You've transmuted that energy.
Mm-hmm. And you can plan for this.
You can plan for it. And it doesn't even need to, be like serious planning. Like I need to write out everything else. It's just like maybe just tell yourself, this is what I'm going to do. Maybe write a sentence or two. You don't have to have like, and then this, and then this, and then this, and this. It's just like, no, the next time this happens, my action is going to be X. And then that will completely translate to the dream realm. Like I've read books where I think it's so fun because whenever I read a book, the way that my brain takes it in is suddenly I start to expand and understand that concept. So if I'm reading a book and it's telling me I can do this, suddenly my dream is now reflecting that, right? Just from reading a book without me even saying, I plan on doing this. So that's already planting seeds in my subconscious. So if you're able to say, okay, like I'm in a nightmare, and this is what I do in my nightmares all the time. If I experience a nightmare, I usually wake up, I'm just like, oh, we had a nightmare again. Okay, what is this showing me? And I don't do too much work on it unless I really need to get into. But it's like, you know, I was running again. This time, instead, I'm going to stop. Or in this nightmare, what happened? For whatever thing, I'm going to do a different choice. And from that place, you can then start helping yourself and changing that. And the beautiful thing is that I tell people is that within every single nightmare is a gift. There's something for you. The gift may be peace of mind. The gift may be something to help you actually in waking reality. But there's always something for you if you're able to stand up and help yourself in that way. And it may take time, though. It may take time. And like for me, it's like sometimes I have nightmares where I'm doing really well and I'm able to make that empowered choice. And then sometimes I wake up and I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I fell into my same patterns. But you have every single opportunity to go back in.
Does this apply to the same world of like night terrors? Because my partner has night terrors, but she doesn't remember them. She rarely ever, if ever, remembers her dreams. I struggle to remember my dreams, but she almost never remembers her dreams. And is this the same sort? I mean, can she plan for that? I guess that would be my next thing is like, what are strategies for people to become more aware? It sounds like you've been trying to do this your whole life to train to become more conscious through dream journaling and through...
Yeah, journaling is definitely the best place to start.
Is meditation or...
I mean, meditation's great too. So here's something cool. Okay, so through meditation, you can actually re-access and re-enter into your dream. So I mentioned about that one thing about coming in and having that shared dream experience. So if you have a dream that's a nightmare, you can go... And I would say... Maybe if you don't feel comfortable doing this on your own, having somebody nearby so that way they can help you if anything else goes wrong, or meeting with somebody who's excited about dreams, or reaching out to me. You can always reach out to me for your dreams. But say you're having this nightmare and you're like, okay, I don't really remember my dreams. I don't know if I'm making the right choices. You can enter into a meditation where you start the whole dream out. You run through your mind exactly how it was, and then you do a little bit of shifting of that. So instead of making this whatever, I'm screaming, there's a bunch of monsters. Instead of doing that, I then decided like I have this sword and I wouldn't really recommend like cutting them, but let's say I have this sword and I'm going to then start cutting these monsters apart and they're going to leave. So you can go into meditation for that. Absolutely. That's accessible. You can also start writing things down of like, this is what I'm going to do. But there's so many practices that you can re-enter into your dream because nothing's ever set in stone. And I wouldn't say that there's like, I could never tell you that that one thing is not going to work because we're all so vastly different that anything could possibly work as long as you believe in it. That's really what it comes down to in dreams. It's like, if you have the heart to believe in anything, you can make anything happen in there.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, that's awesome.
But I'm not, you asked about night terrors. I don't know too much about night terrors. I'm well versed in my own nightmares. I don't know too much about night terrors because I find like I don't ever remember that as well. There's a period of probably like 2 months ago where I was waking up three nights in a row and I lived at home with my family just screaming, but knowing each time like I woke up screaming last night, like knowing in my heart that something was, but I couldn't tell you what that was. That might take some like deep investigation.
Yeah. The last few nights when I've been having these like anger dreams, I know that in the dream I'm like upset but I wake up and I'm having a hard time placing what happened.
Yeah.
And I guess I also in the last few years have sort of lost contact with concretely remembering things. Mm-hmm. It's like a few times a year that I really, there's the bell.
All the kids are running out.
Uh-huh. Sometimes we pick that up, sometimes we don't, but we might pick it up. We might hear the kids. Anyway, school's out. But I think it's a few times a year that I have a really vivid dream that I really remember, and it usually becomes one of those things where it's a shared space or it's deja vu. Yeah,
a spirit dream.
Yeah, but nightmares are always really hard to get a hold on. All I know is that, like, I was scared last night.
Shadowy.
I was moving from something. Yeah. I felt very uncomfortable. It's always hard to get to, like, what was the beginning of the dream? What was the... And I wonder if... when she wakes up and she... I mean, she is screaming for help, and she is terrified... And the fact that she can't remember it at all, I'm like, what is happening in there? What are you, you know? And
yeah, so that might also be something that if every single time you're not remembering, sometimes it's too much to remember, right? Like thinking that maybe she's not ready to handle it. So if this could be something from a past life that's coming through, or trauma that was experienced as a child, it's asking to be healed, but at the same time, maybe the whole weight of it is too heavy to remember in its entirety.
Yeah.
If you think about that, like think about like experiencing something that's so traumatic that it starts to like break you again. It doesn't necessarily want to break you, but it's still showing you that it's there and that's something to be looked at.
Wow. That's wild. Any other tips on how we can become more conscious and intuitive dreamers, and how we can become dream creators or more conscious dream creators?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I have to say always is have fun with it. I think for me, like, I never get bored of my dreams because there's always so much there. And having this energy of fun creates more energy within you to then connect to your dreams. So that's the first place. Like, actually want it, feel it. Be like, okay, I get to go in my dreams. What am I going to do tonight? I can do anything. And bringing that dream energy will, it'll honestly transform your dreams for sure. Second thing that I have to recommend is totally write it down. Because when it comes to consciousness, if you write it down, you're actually able to see things coming straight out of your subconscious mind. You could see it right there on a pen and paper, and then you could start to hold that up to the rest of your life, how you're acting, how you're engaging, also how your physical reality is then manifesting. So for me, it's like becoming a conscious creator. I find that when I'm able to dream something into being, that feels good. That feels good, especially when it's something that I want. So then holding on to that good feeling is then now bringing it back into that dream. Wow, remember that time that I dreamed that really great thing and I was able to do that or like practice for something? I find that I wake up sometimes and I'm practicing for my workshops or if I'm speaking in front of people, I'm practicing in my dream time, which is really cool because then you're gaining that confidence. So definitely connecting to that feeling good energy and knowing that like even if dreams are hard, that there's still, it's a wealth of information that's available to you. Writing down the dreams is the best practice that you can do. I suggest starting with, if you can't write the whole dream down, just write a few words. What did you feel like? That's the best place to start. Hey, what did I feel like? What did this look like? And then any people, like how you mentioned, like, oh, I jumped with my brother to see how that relates. So really recognizing that when you're engaging with your dreams, it's a relationship between you and your dreams and that you're entering into that place as, hey, I want to come, I want to experience myself ever more fully. And I want to experience myself more deeply. What do you have to show me? Okay, I honor the space. I respect the place. And I'm going to have fun with this. And all of that's really going to help transform everything for you. And then building. Because then coming to places like, okay, well, I want to learn to lucid dream or do this. It's all about creating that foundation relationship and then growing from there.
If people are in Southern California and they want to do one of your dream workshops, where can they find you?
Oh, yeah. So my Instagram, @thehoneyhivebuzz.
Mm-hmm. And it's the Honey Hive is like this collective that you're doing.
Yeah.
Dream workshops.
Dream workshops. I have like moon circles and stuff like on the equinoxes and solstices. So basically like aligning with the cyclical nature of time. But you can definitely find me on Instagram. If you want to share any dreams with me, you are always welcome to reach out. I would love to help you. I really find that, I mean, there's just so much to explore and so much to know and, to experience through dreams. So it's @thehoneyhivebuzz.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Devar.
Devar. Okay. That's what I would say. But then I was like, I don't know. Maybe it's, yeah. Where is Devar from?
My dad is from Iran.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's Persian.
Like, that doesn't sound like a Mexican name.
No. Yeah.
Half Persian, half Mexican.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Cool. Anything else you want to say?
No, just happy dreaming. Yeah. Oh, and that I love you guys.
That's a nice way to end.
Yeah, no, I'm an idealist at heart, so just sending that love to you guys.
Awesome. Thank you. She was great. Wasn't she great? I thought she was great. I feel like I could talk to her about that stuff for hours. In fact, we kept talking for about an hour and a half after I stopped recording, and I think I'm gonna need to start living by the ABR principle, because there was some good stuff about God and growth that I guess I'll just have her back on to go further into. But yeah, that stuff just trips me out in all the right ways. I know I'll never fully understand it or even partially understand it, but it's so fun to try. And I don't care what my brother says, we were totally both in that bar in Tokyo watching giant robots punch kaiju into skyscrapers. And maybe I just want to believe that, because it's more fun than a conventional explanation. But also, I have to ask, is it really that far of a stretch to think that there is more going on in the dream world than we can comprehend with our limited waking awareness? Why do I feel anti-scientific when I suggest that the dream space is a real place where we can commune with beings outside of linear and temporal space and time? Is it because I can't definitively prove it? And is hard, irrefutable, tangible evidence the only acceptable standard for truth? I used to think that it absolutely was. It obviously was. But I'm not so sure these days. There is something about internal, experiential truth that might not be solely internal, but speak to something more cosmically true that lacks tangible evidence because it is intangible by nature. It exists outside of our physical waking plane of reality, so it cannot be quantified or observed in our physical waking plane of reality. You know? Anyway, that's the show. People Pleaser is written, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original music also by me, Austin Archer. You can find more of my music and hear more about my other projects at austin-archer.com or by looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. It would really help us out here at the podcast, and by us, I mean me, if you would rate and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you listen to the show, you know, shout us out on your Instagram story once in a while. Let people know. Trying to build a listenership is hard. And if you listen to the show and you like the show, it would really help if you could let people know. Anyway, that's my little pitch. I'll probably do a couple of those over the next few weeks. Listen in next week. I'm going to be talking to my friend David Rosenblatt about tipping. Yeah, you heard that right. We're talking about tipping, so deal with it. All right. See you there. Thanks. Bye.